Hi, this is Chris McGregor. The work of Discerning Hearts really could not continue without your prayers and support. Between now and December 31st, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to Discerning Hearts. We are a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. Click the donate button on discerninghearts.com or inside the Discerning Hearts free app. Your generous support will allow us to continue producing the type of spiritual formation programming you have come to expect from us, like those from Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Monsignor John Esseff, and so many more. Please prayerfully consider supporting our mission, which is dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. Thank you, and God bless from all of us at Discerning Hearts. DiscerningHearts.com presents St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher is a member of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, a religious community dedicated to retreats and spiritual formation, according to the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Father Gallagher is featured on several series on the EWTN television network, including Living the Discerning Life. He's the author of numerous books on the teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola, as well as on the teachings of Venerable Bruno Lanteri, founder of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. I think it could be said, as Pope Benedict XVI noted, that St. Thérèse was a mystic. Why I refer to that is that so many of the mystics, though she seems so ordinary, which that we could have a whole conversation about that, how the ordinary, quote-unquote, mystic may be right closer than you think in your life. And for those who have been noted by the church as being mystics, poetry has been a means of their expression. Whether it was St. John of the Cross, I'm thinking of others that may not have been elevated to sainthood yet, but like Hedwig, and so many others. And in particular, their love for the Song of Songs, which is some of the most beautiful poetry within the sacred scriptures. And so I just think it's an interesting, maybe a footnote at this point, to recognize that St. Thérèse, at this point in her life, at this part of her spiritual journey, is expressing herself in poetry.
I think we also need to keep in mind that Thérèse wrote these poems between the ages of 21 to 24. Most of the great poets are just getting started at that point, you know, and their great poetry comes later. And if you also consider the circumstances in which she wrote and without formal preparation or study of poetry, her achievement becomes quite remarkable. There are, I think, three reasons why we find it a little hard to have access to her poetry. One is that we're reading them in translation, and I'm going to do an exercise in this in a minute. When you translate a poem, take Dante's Comedy out of Italian and into English, it's beautiful, and we have beautiful translations, but nothing certainly can compare to the original, or let's say Shakespeare in Italian translation and so forth. One thing is to see them in the original, where you get the rhyme in them. And then secondly, almost all of them, not all, but the majority of them were written to be sung. And so when you sing them in French, according to the original melody, that's when they really come alive. And then thirdly, you really need to know their setting. So this poem for Marie is not an abstract poem, just speaking generically. It's speaking to this young woman who on this day is entering religious life, experiencing the separation from her family, but above all, the joy of being where her heart has longed to be. So when you reverse that situation and feed all three of those things back into the poem, that's when it really comes alive. Let's do an exercise on this. But just to make the point, this is a lovely poem by the English poet John Masefield. He died in 1967, and it's called Sea Fever, often quoted, beautiful poem. And Masefield spent many years on ships and fell in love with the sea and the tall ships, as he calls them. And so here he writes, I'm just going to read the first two lines here. I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea in the sky, and all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by. Now, what do you have there? You have the rhyme, sky, by. But not only, you have a lovely use of alliteration, repeating sounds. So, for example, the lonely sea and the sky, sea and sky. As we recite this, we're not conscious of all of these things, but we just know that there's something beautiful here. But that's what he's doing. He's consciously repeated the S sound there, the lonely sea and the sky. And then he does it immediately again. And all I ask, all ask, another beautiful alliteration, is a tall ship and a star to steer her by. Star, steer. So he's repeatedly doing things like this that if you translate this poem into another language, you inevitably you're going to lose that. If it's a good translation, the translator will come up with a rhyme in some way. But the structure, the alliterations and so forth, none of that can pass over into translation. So that's something we always need to keep in mind when we're reading Thérèse poems in the translation. And I think wisely, the translator in the volume of her poetry didn't try to reproduce the rhyme in English, but simply translated the sense of the poems. And then later in the book, he gives you the French original of all of the poems.
You know, to be honest with you, Father Gallagher, I wasn't aware that she had poetry.
In one of her letters, she comments on her approach to writing the poems. And this is one of those handful of letters to seminarian, later priest, Maurice Bellière, whom she was asked to pray for and whom she encouraged in his struggles as a seminarian. And at a certain point, the prioress asks her to send him some of her poems. And so she writes this. So she makes copies of some of them. And she says this about her poems. These poor poems will reveal to you not what I am, but what I would like to be and should be. When composing them, I have looked more at the substance than at the form. So that's where she's saying it very clearly. What I'm really concerned with is the message, and I'm not going to try to get every last detail of proper versification in place. That's not my intention here. So the rules of versification are not always respected. My purpose was to translate my sentiments, and in parentheses, or rather the sentiments of a Carmelite, in order to respond to my sister's desires. And as I said earlier, that was the motivation for writing most of the poems that she wrote. Okay, having said all that by way of introduction, let's approach now the poem that she writes for Marie on August 15th, 1895, on the day of Marie's entrance. Now, there's one more piece to give in terms of background here. Because it was the custom of the Carmel that when a sister entered the Carmel, that evening with the community gathered, the sister would sing something for the Carmel. And what Thérèse does here, again, this is this amazing ability to know the person in front of her and to know how to choose something that is going to uplift and encourage this person. So the poem is the 21st of her poems, and the title in translation is Canticle of a Soul Having Found the Place of Its Rest. And the reference is obvious. This is Marie who has finally entered into the place of her rest for the remainder of her life. Now, Thérèse sets this to a melody. And this melody is also available. If you go on YouTube, there are a number of renditions of it. And in French, it's entitled Connais-tu le pays? Do you know the country? Now, the background of this is the following. This is from an opera, and the opera is entitled Mignon, M-I-G-N-O-N. And it's by a composer who was a contemporary. In fact, he would die a year before Thérèse. And very popular at the time, Ambroise Thomas, so Ambrose Thomas, and who wrote a great deal of music, both secular and sacred. He's a French composer best known for two of his operas, Mignon, this one, which was written in 1866. So it's just 25, 24, 25 years earlier. So it's very much in the air, and it's very popular. And he also did one on Hamlet, which was very popular. Mignon is the main character in the opera, and she's a young woman. And it's actually, the opera is based on a story by Goethe. The libretto is written from that. Now, this aria, which is for soprano, so this is one reason why Therese chooses it, because Marie has that lovely soprano voice. And Marie certainly is going to know this aria, with her background in music and the music that was popular at the time. The meaning of the aria, I'll just read a couple of the lines in the English translation. This is Mignon, who is far from her native country, and she longs to be there again, to live and to die there. And what she does in this aria is to sing the beauties of her homeland and then express the longing of her heart to be there. Again, you can see why Therese chose this for Marie. And what she does, what Therese does, is transpose this from a woman who is longing for the physical land of her birth to Marie, who is longing for Carmel, which is her spiritual home and where she wants to be. So in the aria, the singer says, "Do you not know that fair land?" And that's where the title comes from. Connais-tu le pays? Do you not know that fair land where the orange tree grows? Land of fruits bright as gold and the reddest of roses. And she goes on to sing of its charms. And then she concludes this way. Would that I were returning to my dear land, where so happy was I. Tis there, that I am yearning to love and to die. Okay, so that's the poem. Now I'm going to read the first verse in French, and then we'll go through the whole poem in English, but just to give a feel for the poetry as Therese wrote it. Now, obviously, my French, it's not my first language, and I don't have the beautiful voice that Marie had, so it would be lovely to hear someone for whom French is a first language and who can read this with all the beauty it really requires. But I think we'll get some sense, at least, in the reading I'll do here.
We'll return to St. Therese and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher in just a moment. Did you know that Discerning Hearts has a free app where you can find all your favorite Discerning Hearts programming? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Monsignor John Essef, Deacon James Keating, Father Donald Haggerty, Mike Aquilina, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and so many more. They're all available on the free Discerning Hearts app. Over 3,000 spiritual formation programs and prayers, all available to you with no hidden fees or subscriptions. Did you also know that you can listen to Discerning Hearts programming wherever you download your favorite podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, even on Audible, as well as numerous other worldwide podcast streaming platforms? And did you know that Discerning Hearts also has a YouTube channel? Be sure to check out all these different places where you can find Discerning Hearts Catholic Podcasts, dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. Discerning Hearts presents for Advent the writings of Carol Hauslander. Christ's dependence and our Advent.
By his own will, Christ was dependent on Mary during Advent. He was absolutely helpless. He could go nowhere but where she chose to take him. He could not speak. Her breathing was his breath. His heart beat in the beating of her heart. In the seasons of our Advent, waking, working, eating, sleeping, being, each breath is a breathing of Christ into the world.
Carol Hauslander reflects on the profound mystery of Christ's dependence on Mary during Advent. By his own will, the all-powerful God chose to be utterly vulnerable and reliant on her. This self-giving humility exemplifies divine love and invites us to ponder how our own lives, in their simplest moments, might echo this mystery. Hauslander suggests that in our daily activities, our seasons of Advent, each breath we take is an opportunity to bring Christ's presence into the world.
By his own will, Christ was dependent on Mary during Advent. He was absolutely helpless. He could go nowhere but where she chose to take him. He could not speak. Her breathing was his breath. His heart beat in the beating of her heart. In the seasons of our Advent, waking, working, eating, sleeping, being, each breath is a breathing of Christ into the world.
Today, consider each task, each interaction, as a moment where you can breathe Christ into your surroundings. How might you, like Mary, be a vessel for his presence in the seemingly ordinary aspects of your life? For more of the writings of Carol Hauslander, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find them within the free Discerning Hearts app.
Discerning Hearts provides content dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. To continue production of these podcasts, prayers, and more, go to discerninghearts.com and click the donate link found there or inside the free Discerning Hearts app to make your donation. Thanks, and God bless.
We now return to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher.
So after the title, which is the Canticle of a Soul Having Found the Place of Its Rest, Thérèse writes, O Jésus, en ces jours tu brises mes liens. C'est dans l'ordre béni de la Vierge Marie que je pourrai trouver le véritable bien. Seigneur, si j'ai quitté ma famille chérie, tu sauras la combler de céleste faveur. À moi, tu donneras le pardon des pécheurs. So, in the imperfect rendering, you get a sense there of the rhyme and of the poetry. Lien, bien, Marie, chérie, faveur, pécheur. And all of this is to be sung to that really lovely melody of that aria. If you listen to the aria, if you really wanted to get deeply into this, it's actually helpful to do it because there's a moving sense of longing and yearning of heart that's expressed in it, which again, now Thérèse transposes to Marie longing for her place of rest in Carmel. So let's go through the poem. It's not very long. And you really need to imagine the community gathered that evening, Marie singing this with that beautiful soprano voice, singing to that melody of the words that Thérèse has written for her. And Thérèse deliberately chooses this because she wants Marie to shine. So she's chosen a melody that will allow Marie to reveal the beauty of her voice to the community. O Jesus, on this day you have broken my bonds, and so that's all that held Marie back from entering Carmel. In the blessed order of the Virgin Mary, I shall be able to find true wealth. Lord, if I have left my dear family, which is not easy for her parents and for Marie, there's a deep, deep, deep love there between them, and Thérèse is giving Marie words to respond to this. Lord, if I have left my dear family, you will know how to heap heavenly favors on them. I won't be there, but you know how to fill them with graces and blessings. They won't be bereft. You'll be with them. And you will know how to heap heavenly favors on them, and to me you will give the pardon of sinners. And this is just never very far from Thérèse. Why are we here in this life? Why are we living a little way with these little sacrifices and spending time with the sister who's hard for me and helping the one in the laundry that no one else can bear and so forth? Why are we doing these things? It's all apostolic. It's all because she has firmly believed that these smallest sacrifices have great power to work the conversion of souls, bring hearts to God, bring Christ into the world. And so that's never far from her, and it's already here in the first verse as she's giving Marie words for this day of entrance. Jesus, in Carmel I want to live, since to this oasis your love has called me. It's there that I want to follow you, to love you and to die. The editors point out, and that we actually saw, would have been a few episodes earlier, when Marie is pondering her vocation and wondering whether she's called to live and to die in Carmel, and Therese is picking up on that there. To love you and to die. It's there that I want to follow you. There, yes, there. O Jesus, on this day you have fulfilled all my desires. From now on, near the Eucharist, so that's Sister Marie of the Eucharist, and she knows how central the Eucharist is for Marie and the great love that she has for the Eucharist. From now on, near the Eucharist, I shall be able to sacrifice myself in silence, to wait for heaven in peace. Now, this is an interesting thing here. You know, the title of the poem says, Canticle of a Soul Having Found the Place of Its Rest. And so you have the sense that the journey is over, and now I can rest at home. But no, this is just a stop along the way. The real home is heaven. And that's so deep in Therese and in all this correspondence. We've seen some of it, we'll see more of it. But you could not have Therese writing a poem about a place of rest without her heart going immediately to the ultimate place of rest. To sacrifice myself in silence, to sacrifice myself in silence, to wait for heaven in peace, keeping myself open to the rays of the divine host. There's the Eucharist again. In this furnace of love, I shall be consumed, and like a seraphim, Lord, I shall love you. And then this is only a stop, as I say, on the way. Jesus, soon I must follow you to the eternal shore. And that's a phrase Therese uses a lot, eternal shore. Jesus, soon I must follow you to the eternal shore. I won't be here very long. This life passes. That's the eternal resting place. When my days will come to an end, always, always, I shall live in heaven, to love you and never to die again. Always in heaven I shall live, always, yes, always. Which is very much Therese, as I say, in a lovely way. I think I've said before, but I'll just comment here again, how delving deeply into the story of Therese has helped me to see what it can mean to live with the perspective of heaven, which we can lose so easily in the busyness of every day. Therese never loses it. Everything is in that perspective. And it certainly is to be above all with the Lord. In Therese's case, she wants to keep doing good on earth. But very deeply in that, too, is as a family, we'll be together. And nothing will ever separate us again. We'll all be together. Sometimes I just love to think about that, because what are we, you know, 130 years later now? It's hard to doubt that that family is together, you know, in eternity with the Lord. It's very salutary for us, for many reasons, but among them this, to delve into this story, because it awakens again the sense that we are here on the way to our eternal homeland, and to live with that perspective.
For those, again, who have journeyed with us through the varying conversations, that was expressed by her family since she was an infant. The constant reminder that the aunt is praying for us. We need to petition her for help. Or when you get to heaven, this is what you need to do. When I get to heaven, this is what I will be working on. I mean, you hear that so often in the correspondence that you broke open for us, but it was cultivated within the heart of that family that there is an eternal presence that you will and do experience with your family, whether they're with us here or they've passed. It was cultivated in the heart of that beautiful family, wasn't it?
Sure. What's coming to mind as you're saying that is the image of Louis when they're at Les Buissonnets, their home in Lisieux. And he has his, He has his Belvedere up on the attic level of the home. And since the home is placed on a hill, there was a wide-spreading view with a lot of, you know, trees and greenery and so forth. Just a beautiful view in the sky from that height, not only on the hill, but in the upper floor of the house. And they quote him sitting there just gazing out at the panorama before him and just repeating, "Oh, la patrie, oh, la patrie, oh, the fatherland, oh, the fatherland." And very much living in that perspective. I think elsewhere we've also quoted a book that was very much a favorite of Thérèse even before she entered Carmel. And this is by Father Charles Armijon. And in translation, it's entitled The End of the Present World and the Mysteries of the Future Life. This was one of her favorite books, and she really explored this. I think, too, that what added to this deep sense of in heaven we'll all be together forever was the separation. Being in Carmel and the family outside, they could sort of dimly see each other in the speak room. As I mentioned, there's a grill there, and so it wasn't as though you were two people sitting face to face in a room. There was the voices would carry, but the view was somewhat limited. And to think that with the deep love that is there in every member of both families, the Martin and the Garin family, and between the families, that separation tells them all the more, oh, the day is coming when there won't be any separation. And it's one of the things that they long for. It's a beautiful thing, actually. They long for heaven, certainly above all, as I said, you know, because of eternal life with God. But there is never any hesitation in the longing for heaven, because it means the family will be together. And all the illnesses, all the burdens and limitations will all be gone. And it will just be an eternity of being together. And everything we have to bear in this life is worth it, because that's what's awaiting us. You know, that sense is very profound. Now, Thérèse, as I mentioned earlier, does also a second thing to welcome Marie on this day, August 15th, 1895. And what she does is, before Marie enters, she writes out a copy of that poem that I mentioned is probably the best known of her poems, Living on Love, Vivre d'Amour, which is the 17th of her poems. And she puts a copy of it on the bed in the cell that Marie will be entering, and she surrounds it with flowers so that when Marie enters her room, she finds that poem and she finds the flowers there. So just a beautiful way, through small gestures, but which would mean so much to Marie in such a tumultuous day, a transitional day in her life, just to be surrounded by the thoughtful love of Thérèse, who knows how to find ways that will speak to Marie's heart and encourage her and warm her heart on that day.
You've been listening to Saint Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher. Be sure to check out the comprehensive summary and reflection questions contained in the show notes for this episode. To download this particular episode, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find them within the free Discerning Hearts app or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, which is to offer authentic and rock-solid spiritual formation freely to souls around the world. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for Saint Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher.